to Fearless Dentistry, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of dentistry with your fearless host, Dr. John Gordon. Get ready to uncover the secrets, gain valuable insights, and conquer any dental challenge that comes your way. From advanced techniques, innovative technologies, and the ever-important set skills, Dr. Gordon will fearlessly guide you through the evolving landscape of dentistry. This is Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon.
Welcome to this episode of Fearless Dentistry Podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. John Gordon, and I'm pleased to have with me this morning, Krista Swanson, registered dental hygienist. She lives in the Atlanta metro area, and she is a dental consultant and a hygiene consultant, but she also works, you still work in a private practice, correct, Krista?
That is correct, a couple of days a week.
How many days a week?
2 days a week.
2 days a week, good. So she still keeps those instruments sharp and ready. She uses them, and so she practices what she preaches. And I always have thought, Krista, that that's something that's very important with dental education or people that are consulting, is that they have had significant time of experience and or both, that they're still doing what they talk about, because that is authentic proof of what's going on. So I'm excited to have Krista share with you today. We're going to peek behind the curtains of a concept of strategies to triple your hygiene department in 3 years. Now, as a dentist, Krista, if I was introduced to that thought process, this is my thinking, and this is where I always kind of ran my practice was, well, if they say 3 years, can we move that and scoot that down to 1 year? So you also are a mentor, member of the DEP team, which is Dental Education Partners. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Krista, and share with us a little bit more about you, and then let's dive into that triple X hygiene productivity.
Yeah, so thank you, Dr. Gordon, and I appreciate you having me on today. And yes, I am a hygiene coach and consultant with Dental Education Partners, as well as still practicing clinically here in the Atlanta area 2 days a week. And I do practice at a perio office, so I do see a lot of periodontal patients, and I still enjoy it very much. And so I do like to keep myself relevant, and I do still love clinical. I think I'll be a hygienist forever. And I do like helping others and mentoring others as well. So I kind of get the best of both worlds. So how to triple hygiene in 3 years? Yes, we do get requests. Can you do it a little quicker, maybe like 1 year? And we can certainly do that. It just depends on, you know, where the office is currently. So we go into offices sometimes. You know, it's a little bit of a mess, and sometimes they have their stuff together and they're doing pretty well. But just generally speaking, it is a well thought out process. You know, it's a strategic process, and it does take the whole team, and it takes time to master, you know, the systems and the processes. So I think, you know, it's important to that every office look at some metrics, and we call them KPIs, key performance indicators. So some of them are, you know, looking at the average number of patient visits in hygiene. That's one we look at. Looking at the prophy to perio percentage. And, you know, are you converting from prophy to perio? Are you retreating perio? Those are important. And looking at the average number of SRP patients in quads that you're doing per month, SRP quads per month. And also looking at average number of fluoride treatments per month. So we look at the preventative side as well as the periodontal side. And we also look at the average hourly production. This is super important. You know, you want to look at that and your average daily production. And we kind of go from there. So we get a baseline and then work on that.
Yeah. Well, you shared a lot of information, and I had question after question as you were speaking there. So, you know, I'm going to assume that most of my audience is in the category of maybe a little above the average doctor, just because my audience, my program attracts kind of entrepreneurial spirit, spirited dentists. And so let's assume that they are above the average. And so that they do have their act together a little bit more than the general practice of mediocrity. Mm-hmm. Where do you see when you go into offices, Krissa, that on the average, where is their practice at with perio and prophy? Because I'm assuming that most general offices just do prophy. And there's a lot of overlooking of existing perio. For some reason or another, they don't think it's important, or they don't recognize it, or they just don't in-house treat it or even refer it out. Share with me the scenario that when you go into an office, what generally do you see at first?
I generally will pull some codes, procedure by provider, and I do see that there's a lot of prophies and not enough, not enough SRPs being, billed out. You have also hygienists that are on a different page. You have a hygienist that might be really good at fluoride, but not doing a lot of perio. Under 50% is not good. I mean, you need to at least be at 50%. I mean, 50% to 60% of the population, have some form of periodontal disease. So a lot of times I'm seeing, below that, below 50%. So we like to get that percentage up, and the hygienists are a lot of times they are on a different page. Some are really good at perio, some are really good at fluoride. And so we try to get everybody, operating on the same level, basically. But the national average of AHP, which is average hourly production for a hygienist for most PPO offices, is between 150 to 175. Per hour. So yeah. It's kind of low. We'd like it to be around 300,
right,
or right. More.
Yeah. So. In my practice, when we incorporated and really looked at treating periodontal conditions appropriately in our office to a certain level before we referred them out to the periodontist, I asked my hygienist, I said, okay, in your mouth, what would you accept as far as the number of bleeding points? And then we also, for the sake of the patient and for them understanding the issue, we talked about hemorrhage points. Mm-hmm. Patients understand hemorrhage. Gosh, I'm hemorrhaging inside my mouth? Yeah, you are. That's when you put the periodontal probe, you withdraw it, and all of a sudden a stream just starts to flow. And we would give the patient... we would do the intraoral camera and show them that hemorrhaging point. So I asked my hygienist, what's acceptable in your mouth? How many bleeding points would you accept in your mouth, and or how many hemorrhaging points would you accept? And then that's where we drew the line. Said, okay, anything that reaches that particular point and above, that is a perio patient that you need to treat, be it one quadrant, mm-hmm. or all problems. So share with me a little bit about that, Chris, and where you looked at and felt was a good point to draw the line.
I think for myself, 30% bleeding points is something that I think you should definitely be doing some sort of periodontal treatment. Whether it be, 4346 code, which is prophy in the presence of inflammation. If there's any bleeding and there's tartar, that's what I code out and that's what I recommend. And, if you have, a couple of teeth, molar teeth that have 4 and 5 millimeter pockets, they're bleeding, we're going to go right into localized scaling root planing.
Yeah.
4 or more teeth, 4 to 5 millimeters and up, we're going to go right into full quad scaling in each, if it's 4 or more teeth. So that's kind of what I go by. But personally for myself, I don't want any of my patients to have any bleeding. So I'll immediately go into some home care and, coach them on. And I love to get the mirror out and kind of show me what you're doing. And then let me show you what I recommend. And so it's that show and tell and involving the patient. A lot of times we tell the patient what to do, but we don't have them show us first. So if they show us, you know, how they're brushing, maybe they're not brushing properly, maybe they're not flossing properly. So a lot of that, you know, goes into patient education and really telling them what's going on in their mouth and teaching them about the, you know, the body and the, you know, the oral systemic connection. And, you know, I think they really accept treatment when you really just educate them and tell them about the oral disease. And you know, yeah, no bleeding. We don't want any bleeding.
Yeah. And that's kind of a difficult thing, pardon me, with some patients, for them to understand your mouth doesn't have to bleed. You know, they come in and even though they've been under the care in an office for a while, and you know, they floss at home and their mouth bleeds, and they go, oh, okay, well, that's pretty much normal. No, right? We tell them, scratch the back of the palm of your hand, and should that bleed? Do it hard, do it aggressively. Wouldn't you freak out if you did that and the back of your hand started bleeding? That's not normal. Bleeding with our body is not normal. And we did find in our office also that patients were far more accepting than the fear that the hygienist had in presenting this information to patients. Sure, you're going to have some patients reject it. Just for some reason, they're not ready at that point. And no does not mean no now. No means not now, maybe later. The hygienist, what do you see as the biggest obstacle for a hygienist jumping into or accepting the role of really being an educational person in that relationship with the patient?
As far as them accepting treatment?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think hygienists struggle with and confuse empathy and sympathy. So sympathy is when you share an experience or share feelings with another person. Empathy is when you understand the feelings of another, but you don't necessarily share them. So the reason we struggle, I think, you know, we know our patients so well, including their finances, you know, their family situations. We feel badly, you know, that the dental services may be costly for them. And, you know, oftentimes hygienists will feel uncomfortable, so they'll underdiagnose and they'll only recommend preventative services like fluoride. Or let's say, well, we'll give them another chance. You know, maybe we'll do a little bit, you know, a little bit of deep cleaning next time. You know, we try to, I guess, soften the edge a little bit. But, yeah. You know, even the major restorative out-of-pocket expense is, you know, much more burdensome, you know, than a fluoride treatment. So
right.
Listening sounds easy, but it's truly a skill to listen for understanding and not listening to respond. So I think that's what we struggle with as hygienists. We have that relationship with them and we're scared to hurt their feelings. But honestly, most people would rather hear the truth and rather you be direct, be educational, educate them, but be compassionate and have empathy and listen.
Yeah. You shared something very important right there, and I'm glad you brought that out. And this is the way I felt, Chris, with my hygienist in my practice. I considered it the hygiene department, and mm-hmm. it gave them a little bit more of a fluff to who they were and a little bit more of a degree of feelings, really self-importance within the practice. Is that the hygiene department. And it was their responsibility to maintain standards and help develop the standards of the hygiene department. And this is where it was really difficult at first when I started instituting a good periodontal program in our mm-hmm. practice was getting the hygienist over the concept that they had to immediately start picking up the instruments and probing for pockets and get the scalers going. And I told them, no. The most important thing that you do with this patient at all times is sitting down and having a conversation. Leave the instruments to the side and have a very, very relevant empathetic conversation with them and get to know them. Even if that patient has been coming in for 6, 7, 8 years, maybe you don't know them really well. And it's a good time to sit down and just understand and listen to their story.
And then, I love that.
Yeah. You know, as I went through the Pinky Institute, and one thing that, you know, LD continually told us is never work on a stranger. And, you know, at first I really didn't understand it because it's kind of like, okay, I've been seeing this patient for 4 years. They're not a stranger. Well, that's not what he really meant. He meant, do you really understand the spirit and the heart of this patient? And so I turned that around myself and started asking my patients really great, relevant questions about them and then listen to their answer. And then my next question was based upon what they just shared with me. And so this is a kind of a difficult thing for people to learn to do. And I felt like particularly hygienists and dentists also, because when we're going through dental school, we're taught to drill fill. Mm-hmm. You know, get the instruments in the mouth and get busy. And that's where the production is. And, you know, in hygiene, I'm sure that's the same thing. Get those skaters going and get the prophy going. You know, the hygiene department, prophy. No, that's not it. So I'm sure that's where the triple X comes in, Krissa. So share a little bit about the triple X approach. Don't give away all the secrets, but give us just a little bit to tease us for more interest.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
What's that?
What do you mean the triple X approach? Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Triple, or you can triple the production.
Yeah. So in relation to, I've already mentioned, I think the five most, but the best ways, you know, is to determine the current baseline. Okay, so that's what we do first. And then identify, you know, the patient care goal that the team wants to impact. Okay. Have them be accountable. You know, we talked about KPIs. There are several business analytics softwares that make it easy as well to track these patient care metrics. There's Jarvis. There's practice analytics, and then we use dental intelligence in our consulting. We find that that's user-friendly and pretty easy to use. So so they have accountability within their department, okay? So that's important. Measuring consistently and, you know, making sure that you are meeting with the department head every month. You have your monthly goals. And as an office, I feel like you should be meeting once a month to talk about the office goals and celebrate successes. That's big. You want to celebrate your successes along the way. So celebrate with your team. And then, you know, you break out and each department has their own goals and you're all working towards a common goal for the office. So yeah. I think that's the best approach.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I'm glad you mentioned the goals, the production goals per day, per hour, and per month for the hygiene department. And setting those goals, there can be some resistance of, oh, we're diagnosing periodontal deals strictly to meet goals. And I know that is an issue because I had to overcome that issue with one or two hygienists in my days. And what I had to share with them is that if you don't set goals, where do you know, how do you know where you are really at? And goals tend to keep you on the edge of sharpness. And if goals and the accomplishment of goals is strictly a measurement of what you are accomplishing chairside with the patient. And the relevant conversations with people and with patients helps develop a relationship with them where they are far more apt to accept your treatment recommendation and make it more believable to them. Did you see that also, Krissa?
Exactly. You know, I had a coach once when I was a baby hygienist, and at first, you know, when they brought in all of this, you know, we're going to measure this, we're going to, you know, you're going to have goals, and we were all like, goals, numbers, that's not our thing, you know. But
Right.
really, it's about focusing on patient care and improving clinical outcomes. If you
Yes.
focus on patient care, the production comes naturally. You don't have to think about it as selling. You know, many hygienists say, I don't want to sell to the patients. I don't think this is necessary. Well, educating patients on oral disease and sharing how to resolve the disease, it's not selling. It's allowing the patient to make an informed decision about their health. So I think that it's not selling. It's not all about money. It's about taking care of the patient. The money comes always. So
Yeah.
our goal is to remind the hygienist why they got into this profession to begin with, and that is to take care of the patients, because we do get lazy. Sometimes you're going with the flow, you know, and it reminds you, okay, I have to parachart. I want to parachart every visit. You just set goals. So maybe you were only paracharting every once a year. Some offices, it's not even every year. So we kind of narrowed down, okay, what are the goals? Is it to, are we going to parachart every patient every time now? And it's kind of like, that's what I do and personally. And I think that patients appreciate, and they start to say, well, what are my numbers? What are my numbers this time? You know, getting them involved in their care. And you're like their hero. When you
Yeah.
get them healthy, you're their hero. They're like, every time I come to you now, you know, I'm just so happy. And I used to not, you know, like to come to my cleanings, and you got me healthy, and I have no more bleeding. And I mean, to me, that's like, that makes me so happy.
Yeah. You know,
So.
you're right. The patients do. They say, what are my numbers now? And they've educated themselves, and they've taken the information that the hygienist has given them. That the hygienist has taken the time to deliver that information to the patient in a manner with which they understand the relevancy of those numbers, and they're excited to learn them about them. You know, whenever we go to the physician and, you know, they draw our blood for our chemistry, all of us are anxious to get those results back because we want to know what our numbers are, because our numbers are important. It translates them to the level of our health. And most people that really buy into the periodontal program of the office, they want to know the numbers because it is a direct reflection upon the degree of health of the mouth. Now, not everybody's going to be excited about it, and that's okay. But it's up to us to be consistent in the manner with which we do it. And so we were periodontal probing every appointment, every 6 month appointment. And you know, if it was a periodontal patient and we had them coming back on a 3 month recall versus a 6 month, we would probe them. It just became, what is the industry standard of care? But then more importantly, what is your practice standard of care and maintaining that and being very, very consistent with that?
Right.
Yeah.
I agree. I agree.
Yeah. You know, taking a hygiene, you mentioned earlier the normal numbers are 150 an hour, something like that. Is that what you said?
Yeah, the national average is that. And we see that a lot.
Yeah. So describe to me and to the audience, Krista, how we then could take that. You know, if we triple that, we're talking about 450 an hour. That's a very good number. I like that number. So let's double it, and let's say we're at 3 to 325 an hour. What does that day look like for a dental hygienist?
Well, you know, the goal is to, you want your hygienist to produce three times their salary, including payroll, taxes, benefits. You know, you want them producing three times, you know, their hourly. Okay. So if you're at 300 an hour, that's pretty good. If you're making, you know, 50 an hour, or if you're making 60 an hour, you want to be at, you know, 180 an hour, producing 180 an hour. So it is a numbers game. And for a dentist to be profitable, you want that hygiene production to be 30% of the total office production at least. And like I said, three times, they need to be producing three times their salary. Mm-hmm. So if they're at 150, 175, we'll look at, well, what procedures are they doing? Are they billing correctly? You know, we'll look at how many patients are they seeing a day? How many new patients are they seeing a month or on a daily basis? You know, how are they doing on the preventative side? How are they doing on the periodontal protocol? So we look at how to enhance that and sometimes it involves, you know, patient, you know, audits, like chart audits. So having them look at, having a different hygienist look at each other's charts and say, how would you treat this? How would you treat this? And kind of getting everybody on the same page because it is about, you know, treating the patient. And we can't do prophys when they're truly a periodontal patient. And, you know, keeping as much periodontal treatment in-house is better. I mean, I do think there's a time when you do want to refer out for certain situations, but keeping as much as you can in-house, I think, you know, us as hygienists, we do a pretty good job, you know, with the scalings. And I think we can do a really good job in our chair. Now, all that being said, I think, like I said, focusing on patient care and looking at your schedule and what can I do? And speaking about that, I think a variety of services throughout the day is better. You know, having a mixed variety of services in your schedule every day helps to increase that production as well, whether it be sealants, whether it be, you know, locally delivered antibiotics like, you know, Restin. So things like that can, you know, add to that production. But also just when you're focusing on those goals, when you're focusing on the patient care, that's when you will really focus on those things, and your production will go up, because maybe before you weren't applying a Restin when there was a 5 millimeter pocket. Maybe you were just letting it go. And so I think that's why it's important to have those goals for hygienists. And we get excited about taking care of patients. Yeah. I mean, that's what hygienists need, structure, and they are lifelong learners, and they want to take care of people, and they want to do the best job they can do. 95% of hygienists, that's how they are. Yeah. So, you know, And it has to do with, you know, your leader too. So if you have a leader that's really not aggressive and doesn't really care about hygiene and doesn't really care about, doesn't, you know, ask those questions and doesn't have a protocol for their hygiene department and for their periodontal protocol, it's easy for hygienists to say, okay, well, you know, just going to do the bare minimum. But like I said, it starts at the top and goes down. The leader has to set the example and has to set, you know, the expectations, and you go from there.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because the importance of the hygiene department in the office does originate from the dentist and his leadership, and hopefully, and him bringing, you know, you into the office is a display to everybody that this is important. Not all dentists are going to realize that and do this and make this move. But when you come into the office and you're invited to consult that practice, he's making a move and saying, this is important to me. But it's also, he needs to understand the process also and stay committed. You know, having frequent meetings with just the hygienist. And, you know, sometimes also incorporating the entire office, because the assistants and the peripheral team will probably have some good ideas also to help support what's going on in the hygiene area there. But having those meetings and and clarifying the intent, the purpose, and the pathway and the process, and dialoguing, and like you said, doing a little chart review here and there, and being vulnerable with each other to the growth of the hygiene department. When you go into practices, do you see more of a hesitation with the doctor or the hygienist or the whole team? Where do you see the biggest hesitation?
Mostly the hygienist, you know. So they sometimes don't like change. It's especially the ones that have been a hygienist for a long time. You kind of set in their ways. It's hard to change. Yes. But that's why, you know, you have to learn those critical skills for communicating. Whether, you know, you're talking to an older generation or a younger hygienist that's freshly out of school, there's different ways to talk to people. Just being relatable. And I think that's one of my assets, is that I can relate to anyone, you know. Being relatable, being diplomatic, just really listening will help. But, I mean, there's some pushback with hygienists, especially me being a hygienist. Well, what does she know that I don't know? But honestly, me being a hygienist is easier because I can relate. I understand what they're going through. Yeah. And so I think after, you know, talking with them, they kind of go, oh, okay, you know, she's here for us to help us, not to say I'm better than them, not to say I know everything, because I don't, yeah. You know, and some offices are really high tech. And sometimes I haven't always used some of the things that they're using. I'm learning. I learn just as much as they learn. I learn from them as well. Yeah. So, yes, I have a lot of experience, but I'm still learning. And yeah.
I think, you know, what you mentioned there about some of the hygienists, you know, they've been practicing for a good number of years. When they bring something in like this, it is due. It's change. It requires a little bit different degree of effort. And, you know, oftentimes we, like you said, we settle in and we resist something new like this, and particularly when it's going to challenge us to grow and change who we are. But the thing that I always looked at, Krista, was this gives the hygienist the opportunity to feel very relevant, to really make a contribution to people. And I think that that's something that's really important. And we need those things to feel good about who we are and what we're doing day in and day out in the office. And that's why that's one of the rewards that I felt with my practice and with my hygienist, is that you folks are important. You have a very vital role with the health of these patients and their lives. Grasp it. Use it. You have 1 hour in there. And I let my hygienist schedule their next appointment. So if they wanted an hour and a half with that patient, terrific. We very rarely went less than an hour. If they wanted 2 hours with them, I didn't care. You do what you need to do with that patient. This is your hygiene department. It's your hygiene practice. Make it what you dream. And that's what I look at here, is make every day your most fulfilled day in your career. And once you experience a day like that, you want to replicate it. Because at the end of the day, Krista, and I know you know what I'm talking about, you feel so good about the contribution that you made. It's exhilarating. And you just think, how can I repeat this day in and day out? That's where you come in with DEP and with what you try to do with offices, is recreate or help them initially create their most fulfilled, exciting day, productivity-wise, but also relational with patients and how they have made a difference in a person's life through what they did with their instruments, but more importantly, what they did with their soft skills. That, to me, is exciting. It's invigorating. It's motivating. Let's get it done. Let's do it again tomorrow.
That's right. I love all of that.
And that's what you're about, right?
What I'm about. That's what I do.
That's what you do. Great. Okay. Let's bring this home with one thing. If there's one thing that you could tell the hygienist in a practice about a periodontal program, what would that be? What would be the one thing that you could tell them that would help them start creating the most fulfilled day in their career?
I would say just take time for yourself. If you have to go to the back, take a deep breath. Always be present for each patient, no matter what the previous patient, if they brought you down, just find a way to be positive and just take time to yourself and just remember why you got into hygiene school, why you're doing what you're doing is to create value, to help others, and to, you know, become a valuable member to your team and to your patients so they come back and see you again. That's why we do what we do, to help people, to get them healthy. And so just take time to yourself and take the time with the patients, get to know them, understand them, and just do the best you can, really.
Yeah. I think that's a great closing thought, Brissa. Well said. Well said. I appreciate you being with us today, Brissa. We will, on our show notes, have the information that people can use to make connection with you. And okay. Is there anything else that you want to share?
I think that's it. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure. I love the conversation. Hopefully I can help others. And hopefully other people are listening and I can help them. And you can reach me at Krissa@dentaleducationpartners.com.
Perfect. We'll make sure that they have that simple link and connection in the show notes. So thank you for being with us today, Krissa. Great information. And this is our show for today. I'm your host, Dr. Jenny.
Thank you for joining us on Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon. Stay fearless, keep pushing boundaries, and continue making a lasting impact in dentistry. Subscribe for more Fearless Conversations. Until next time, keep spreading smiles.